Welcome to Are You Real Creatives, shaping culture through creative influence. Connect with artists that are redefining what it means to break through industry barricades and are becoming a driving force in the world by sharing their individual gifts, struggles, and experiences. Now, please welcome your host, Matt Dietz. This is Are You Real Creatives?
Welcome to Are You Real Creatives, where we are connecting with artists in today's church culture who are doing big things. And today I am joined by the one and only John Egan. John is doing some really incredible things. I love John's music. You love John's music. We all love John's music. John has been at New Life Church for quite some time, doing some things with Desperation Band. Most of you be familiar with that. A lot of connections and doing music with some of the biggest names, and then recently doing music with Jesus Culture with his not so new song, but new to the connection with the Jesus Culture aspect of it, Make a Way, one of my favorite songs, one of my favorite artists. John, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you being on the show.
Thanks, Matt. It's awesome to be here. Thanks for your kind words.
Yeah, absolutely. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about your history? Obviously, we mentioned the fact that you're at New Life Church. I know there's a lot of history there, but even before New Life Church, obviously, you've spent some time in music. But even before music, what has really brought you to the place that you're at right now? Tell us a little bit about your life.
Yeah, it's fun adventure. I grew up in New Jersey, in the Northeast, which I love and I miss. We lived in like a suburb town, North New Jersey, literally, I mean, a beautiful kind of farm-ish area, but we were 18 miles from Manhattan. So we were downtown New York City within, you know, with a 20-minute drive or traffic, an hour and a half drive. But I loved it there. My parents actually still live there. So I was born and raised in the same house, and they still have that house. And our church in New Jersey, for New Jersey, was really big church up in the Northeast. Churches are quite small. So our church was about 500 or 600 people, which in a mega church world is small, but in the Northeast, it's really quite large. Mm-hmm. And I was a drummer. I played drums in our worship band growing up. And then when I was in high school, our church went through this really cool season that we called renewal. And I think that was just kind of the term that was used to describe what was happening. People were just being refreshed in the presence of the Lord. So I totally just got turned on to worship and the presence of God and found out what that was because we spent so much time doing it. We actually, throughout my high school years, I lived a different type of high school life because every Friday night and Saturday night, we were at church and I was playing drums for hours on end for these worship services. And people from all over the Northeast would come out just to check out what God was doing. There was high expectation, high anticipation. And it's how I got into the worship thing. So it's why I lead the way I lead now is because, you know, I didn't get into this necessarily because I fell in love with music, though I do love music. I got into this because God could do anything in any moment. And that is exciting. And that's such a rich life to me. And it's an exciting, adventurous life to me. So from New Jersey, I went to Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So it was quite a change and a culture shock. I was introduced to kind of Midwestern Christianity, which was so foreign to me. I never saw ever a man with a suit asking for money on television ever until I went to ORU. And it was so fascinating, but it was so foreign to me that, it didn't even bother me. It was almost comical. It's like, wow, okay. You know, it's interesting. And then you meet these guys, you know, suit-wearing guys who are actually doing extraordinary things. You're like, well, I don't know. Maybe they're onto something. But I spent 4 years of my life there, which was really great. And that's where I started to lead worship. You know, a lot of the stuff out of the UK was starting to surge up, like Matt Redman, and most notably for me, Delirious. When I heard that, kind of everything changed for me. I was in my dorm room, and my father, who has zero musical ability whatsoever, he sent out a bunch of CDs because he was just over in the UK from Delirious. He's like, you have to hear this, you know. Mm-hmm. And when I did, it was over. I spent hours in my dorm room learning guitar. It was awesome living on a dorm floor with like 30 different guys, and 20 of them played guitar. So all I would do is walk around and learn from all my roommates and floor mates. And so that's when I felt like the Lord was saying, it's time to come off the drums, you know, and lead some worship. So really kind of a late bloomer to worship leading, because it was toward the end of college. And, but then from there, I had a bunch of good friends that graduated and moved right back up to where they grew up here in Colorado Springs, and they were all part of New Life Church, and they were all just ready to graduate and come back and be a part of the church here. And so I'd come visited once, and this was quite a church, really amazing church, and I never really actually seen anything like it. And I was about to graduate, and one of my buddies called me and said, "Hey, we're looking for a youth worship leader. Are you interested?" And again, being in New Jersey, I thought, is that even a thing? Are you hiring? Are you hiring a youth worship leader? How is that even possible? And they're like, yeah, we want to hire a worship leader just for the youth. And it wasn't for much. I think I made $800 a month for like the first year. But what did I care? I was young and single and, you know, sounded pretty good. So yeah. I moved up here and met my wife here, got three kids now, and started writing songs here. I never written until I got here. And when I got here, shortly after I got here, one of our youth pastors wanted to start a prayer gathering called Desperation. And that's it. He said, "I just want to get kids, young people, students praying and fasting. So can a couple of you guys lead worship for it?" So like, yeah, that sounds amazing. And it felt like the old renewal days from when I grew up. So I was like, I'm in. This is me. Hmm. And then our worship leader at the time said, "You should write some songs for this event." And which at that point, the only original worship songs that I really was listening to was Delirious. And Hillsong kind of was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
This is 16 years ago, you know.
And right.
So sure, why not? You know, innocence, blind innocence. Just we went for it. And really, it's kind of off to the races from there. I mean, we're still 16 years later. I'm 38 now. We're still leading worship for the Desperation Movement, Desperation Conference. And it's really been this incredible thing that's happened here out of Colorado Springs. And then our church as well, leading worship for our church as well, has been kind of probably just the foundation of what we are and what we do, what I do, keeps me grounded. And then the songs over the years have provided an avenue for travel and ministering outside of the walls of the church. And this has just been really fun and really scary. And so that is the nutshell. And that all sounds pretty great, but a lot of that's come at a cost. Our church has gone through the worst you can imagine. We lost our senior pastor to a scandal. 10 months later, we had a shooting at church right after service got out. We lost two teenagers that day. So we've had many days where we've wondered if we'd have a church the next day. But God is kind, God is faithful, and the people of God are really resilient.
Yeah.
And, absolutely. You know, so that's the nutshell. I can keep going because that's a broad sure. question. Give me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's so much so much there that's encouraging. One of the most encouraging things, on a lighter note, is that drummers can actually experience the presence of God.
It's possible.
It is possible. Yeah, that's encouraging to the modern day worship leader. The drummer can actually experience the presence of God. And I love that, man, that story. And I remember very clearly, I'm connected at Trinity Fellowship in Amarillo. And so we have a pretty close connection to New Life. And I remember very vividly the experiences that you refer to with the scandal and also with the shooting. And I want you to talk about that a little bit. What did that, you know, those experiences in the local church, obviously you're writing music on a very kind of global scale. It's being received by the global church. But some of those experiences, you know, I know experiences in songwriting carry into the songwriting. What have those experiences done? How did it shift the culture of your worship team? How did it shift the culture of your writing? What did that do?
Yeah, you'd hate to capitalize on the pain of anything, especially on the pain of others. We had one family who lost two family members that day, teenagers, 16 years old and 18 years old. Yeah. But there is something so remarkable about what God could do in our weakness. And we kind of get that in our heads. It's intellectual knowledge because we read it. Paul talks about it, you know, in the scriptures. you know, we rejoice in our weakness because God's power is made perfect. And, but it's not just an idea. It's for real. And we were, I don't know, you know, we were young, and I think we started to get a little, like, we were ambitious, too. And I'm not talking about in any kind of impure way, though I'm sure everything we do is impure. We're who's righteous? No one. But we weren't attempting to be ambitious for impure ways. And then all this happens. So you're stripped of it all. I mean, who are you? You know, you get a scandal, sure, which is brings shame and embarrassment. You know, who's going to trust you again? Who's going to care about any song you write again? Hmm. You know, 10 months later, kid comes on in church campus and opens fire. I mean, which is happening all too often. We see out there. And what do you then you add in? So you have shame, and then you add in fear because you have murder that happened, and it's then where do you go? I mean, as people who are kind of, hey, we feel called to write songs, we feel called to be a voice. And so we were completely just stripped of everything we thought we were standing on. And how that has become a renewal of our salvation has been remarkable, because who are we to stand on anything but Jesus, you know? Who are we to stand on? It's all sand, you know? And this experience caused, we looked around at our ship, and it had holes in it, right? And all of a sudden you can't stand on the top deck taking in the sun. You got to get down below, and you got to grab a bucket, and you got to start bailing water. And what that did for us is it bonded our hearts to each other. You know, it connected us. And when we were flat on our backs, it's like it's as God had this freedom to show his power, to show his provision, to show what he could do without so much of our help, without so much of our efforts. And so it shaped us completely. So here we are, it's been 10 years since then, and it's just, it's shaped everything. I mean, every song has a raw reality, a raw truth to it based on a lot of things that we've been through. It's our testimony. And you know, we had always written songs that we felt like our church would want to sing or needed to sing. And then we knew that the Lord possibly would use those songs outside of the church. But I don't know. I think in those days we just said, I don't know if outside the church exists right now to us. We're just trying to help out. And we wrote songs to give our people language, you know, which is where the song Overcome came from. That was completely for our people, because one of our youth pastors was praying Revelation 12:11. We overcame by the blood of the Lamb, the word of our testimony. And I was at a prayer meeting as we're desperate for God, desperate for God to do something and save us. So started singing that song, and it's become, still is, a special song to our community.
Sure.
And the fact that it's done anything outside of this community really is just, you have to kind of laugh, you know? It's like, wow. God is just, he could do what he wants with who he wants. He could do what he wants through any situation. You know, we have a different type of faith in what God could do. So it's shaped a lot of things, man. And I think the biggest thing is worship is most powerful when it comes at a cost. And because worship is that. The presence of God is full of pleasure, is full of mystery, but it's also full of cost. And only now in this life, if you think about it, in this time, in the pre-redeemed time of life and the pre-made perfect earth, and here we are now, only now can we offer God something through tears. Only now can we offer God something through fear. And when all is made right and every tear is wiped away, you know, I don't know what things are going to be like with worship, but now I know that we could offer God something through the pain. And that has shaped our church's understanding of worship in a really cool way. And it's affected my view of worship in a really cool way.
That's awesome. That reminds me of a quote. Bill Johnson talks about an experience that he had with his dad when his dad was on a hospital bed, and you know, he gathered his family, said, "This is the only time we're going to be able to thank God in this environment, or praise God in this environment. And I want to take this moment and this opportunity to praise him in the pain, in the midst of the pain, because once we get on the other side of glory, there's not going to be this pain, and there's not going to be the opportunity to offer him this sacrifice of praise at that point in time."
And how awesome is that?
Yeah, that's incredible. That's amazing. So I love
I love where you're coming from, and it's really evident to me that you're not just a worship artist, you're obviously a worship pastor, because some of the things that are coming out show the pastor's heart. And I would just, I would want to really kind of grab hold of something that I feel like's there, because you talked about how that experience stripped away the ambitions, or it stripped away the things that didn't need to be there. Obviously, not every worship artist, not every worshiper, not every human being on the face of the planet is going to be faced with some of the circumstances that your church was faced with.
Yeah.
And you have had people come into your process post the experience, with the shooting and the scandal and that sort of thing. I know Corey Asbury joined you guys for a time. There were several artists that, you know, people that continue to come into your midst. How do you, as a worship pastor, teach or relay the process of stripping away? Because we all have ambitions. Let's be honest. Let's be real. Yeah. We all have ambitions. It's a natural part of who we are. There's a there's a natural man that still wants to pursue and get honor and glory and accolades and all of those things. And we all have ambitions. How do you, as a pastor now, with your experiences, teach those that are coming into your organization, your church, how to strip those ambitions away and really get down to the purity, the nuts and bolts of what worship's about? I know that song you mentioned, Matt Redman earlier, The Heart of Worship, that he wrote so many years ago. That's really the, when I think of the song that emulates that ideology, that it's not about the ambition, it's not about the accolades, it's about nothing but worship. How do you, as a pastor, get that through to your team as they come in to your culture?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you have some significant wounds, it kind of gives you a bit of an authority to speak on what caused those wounds. When you have a limp, when you're really limping, like Jacob wrestled with God and then he limped and then his brother took compassion on him and didn't kill him. I mean, our limp can save our life, like it saved his. And so I think that you have a bit to stand on. So I think New Life in Colorado Springs has always been this kind of cool river. We don't want to be a reservoir. We just take in, we don't let out. I mean, a river takes in water and lets out water. And so, yeah, a lot of worship leaders come in and out, and I think there's seasons for people to come and be healed and seasons for people to come and get perspective on maybe the heart of worship. And I appreciate what you're saying. And we do our best to help that. But I think what we could speak to is only what we could speak to. You're right. I mean, it's been happening for centuries. It's biblical. Back to Cain and Abel, the first ever guys who were offering God anything that we could read about. They were jealous. Cain was jealous.
Sure.
And he got jealous of his brother and how God was embracing his offering and his worship. We do the same stuff now, you know, and then Cain ends up killing his brother because of that jealousy. He couldn't get over it, you know, and what do? I mean, we're just destroying each other in our own hearts, or we're doing it in passive aggressive ways over social media. It's really sad, but history keeps repeating itself. And I think the best thing that we can do is just keep trying to course correct, because I think in some way most of us would agree that we are trying to approach God. We are trying to get closer to God. We're trying to partner with God for the kingdom. I think we'd all agree that we're trying to do those things, but we get off course. I mean, the spirit of the age is all about consumerism, and the spirit of the age says, give us the cool, sexy king. Just like, again, I mean, it's all right there in scripture. Israel had to have a king. Why? Because everyone else had a king. So here we are repeating it. We have to have the sexy worship leaders. Why? Because everyone else has the sexy singers. Or, you know, we continue to repeat that. So all we could do is call each other out. And with love, I mean, God is so ridiculously kind. He's so able to use us through all this stuff, which is so bizarre. I mean, even that story about Israel needed a king. So that wasn't God's plan, but he gave them one anyway, because that's what the people wanted in Saul. And Saul was a flawed guy, but also God blessed them. So God I don't understand him. His grace and his love makes absolutely no sense. And he pours out love on us even when we're in the wrong. So he's doing that for us. So we could help course correct. We could help, you know, the Lord, We could rebuke things, you know, we could tear things down like the prophets used to do. And man, the best we could do is course correct and just say, hey, here's what we're going for. Here's how we could approach God. Here's how we could ascend the hill of God. You know, here's how we can clean our hands. Here's how we could purify our hearts. But I think a lot of it's just being aware of what the spirit of this age is. And it is about these certain things that could really distract from the heart of worship. And we just have to be careful. And I think God is not as worried about it as we are. I think God's not as mad about it as we are. I think that I picture God laughing a little bit at us. you know, it's like, oh, you guys, you know, even as you correct things, you just take yourself so seriously. But that's the best way we can.
Yeah, that's really good. I love that. And I think I love the perspective on the correction aspect of it. And I think that's something that probably all of us need, but especially in the church. I think we've, for so long, especially for the last probably century, really focused in on the aspect of the discipline part of it, where the relationship part of it has gotten lost. And I love the direction, you know, even this is a perfect segue to talking about the song Make a Way, because so much of that song, the language of that song, talks about this relationship with a God who does things just to make opportunity for you for the sake of relationship. And I love the heart behind that song, and I love the heart behind what you're saying. Talk about that song a little bit. Where did it come from? What's the history of that particular song?
Yeah, I appreciate what you're saying. I was on a writing trip. I tried to take, so the pace of my life now has been writing every day. But there was a time, a few years ago, I was not able to do that because I was helping run the worship department here at the church, which I realized after a few years of doing that was going to kill me. It's not what I'm wired for. So luckily a couple of years ago, I was able to change that. But it was a few years ago where I'd had to just plan a few trips to write to get that going. And I was really exhausted. I was really starting to feel that kind of that, not to be cliche, but that burnout vibe of going, what in the world am I doing? I'm just killing myself. So I went on this trip and I had some writing sessions set up and I went to a church service. The first thing I did, friends of ours have this church, and he told this story that I didn't even know about, this total miracle story about not being able to have children and the medical reasons, and they just believed for a miracle, and a total full-on miracle took place, and now they have multiple children. And I just had this phrase in my head that was, where there is no way, you make a way. And it sounded pretty catchy, but I was thinking it would make a cool song idea, but I was just on and on thinking, like, no, this is from not where there was no way, he made a way, you know, through Jesus on the cross. Where there's no way today, he makes a way, which brings in that he's working today. So anyway, the next day, I had a writing session with a friend and brought this idea. And it's not that common that songs just flush themselves out so quickly. I know you've probably heard, doing these podcasts, you've probably heard a million of those stories. And I venture to say half of them are true and half of them are not. But we immediately had like a map, you know, I wanted to include language that was really sacred. So the first verse had the stuff from the Apostles' Creed describing Jesus. And when you're talking about where there's no way you make a way, I wanted to hone in on Jesus and God from God, light from light is all Jesus. And then the bridge was a quick addition because it was kind of, it's always been, always is, and always will be. If you're going to talk about miracles, if you're going to talk about God pulling off the impossible, you have to make it about Jesus. So it was an exciting session, really exciting. We finished it in a few hours and demoed it. And it was the kind of thing where you look at each, I mean, these sessions are so fun because we looked at each other. It was with a friend named Jason, and we looked at each other and just said, you know, did that just happen? This is a really special song. and we knew it, and no one had heard it but us. No one had heard it. And it's so cool because that was enough to know that just me and Jason and God heard it. And it was so we celebrated that night. Like, let's go out to dinner. Let's call some friends. You know, and because we felt like we had something really unique and really special. And we were celebrating a song that no one but me and him and God had heard. And it was really, really exciting time. And then we recorded it on the Desperation Man project. And it's been cool to see it taking some traction. And then the Jesus Culture thing, if you want me to talk a bit about that.
Sure.
That was Banning Leacher is the pastor and leader of Jesus Culture. And we were at an event and I was leading and I sang a song, a new song that actually we still haven't recorded. We're going to do it in the next couple of months. And he grabbed me afterward and said, "Hey," because we hadn't met him a few times, but he said, "Hey, what's that song?" I was like, "Oh, you can't get it." And he's like, "Man." And he's like, "My heart's just really stirred from that song. And it's also just, I think the Lord's stirring my heart about you." I was like, "Well, you know, I love that. I just love when the Lord does stuff like that." So, and I obviously respect him. So he's like, "Hey, can we go to dinner tonight?" And anyway, we caught up, and this is a couple of years ago. So I've been starting to, we've been moving the Desperation Band thing to hand it off to some younger guys, because it's at the heart of what it is. It's a youth worship thing. And I've been leading so much worship for multi-generational settings and for church. And a lot of my songs are really not just geared toward an age group. So I was telling him about that, and we just became instant buddies, you know, instant friends. Mm-hmm. And it's as simple as Banning just, you know, he's just really, he's a pioneer, and he kind of gets something in his sights and he goes for it. And he's just a powerful guy, full of faith. And he's become an amazing friend. But he said, "Hey, you want to come out to the church and lead with the team?" And so I was like, "Of course I do, man. I love Jesus Culture." And I honestly didn't think anything would come of it. 2 weeks later, he called me and said, "How about this for a date?" And so a couple weeks later, I was there and leading with them. And they did a summer of worship. And we did Sunday morning services. And then Sunday night, we did a whole big night of worship. And man, it was amazing. Just my heart was awakened to these guys and love for them. I got to know a bunch of those guys on the team and worship leaders that you know who they are. And they're really sweet people. And they're really innocent people. They're just good men and women of God. They just love God and doing their best to write some songs, doing their best to be passionate. And they're just, obviously the Lord just has breathed on what they do. So anyway, one visit turned to two, which turned to three, which turned to, for some reason, you should just come to the recording and sing a song. And we don't know why. We're not, you know, it's like, it's been this amazing laid back relationship that I'm just grateful for. And we've never to this day talked anything official, really. Well, that's not completely true, but we haven't gotten too serious about anything official. So it's been a blast. But the main part of it is relationship, and that's the power of it. It's a relationship that I have with those guys, especially Banning. He's just been a good friend and a good pastor, kind of an older brother.
I love that. I love the fact that, you know, in an age, because, you know, worship over the course of the last decade or last two decades has really evolved into something that is not a machine, but it's really become a business and really the predominant force within Christian music, realistically. I mean, it's taking over. You know, you have the Bethels and the Jesus Cultures and the Hillsongs that have really emerged as the top tiers of what Christian music, what really exploits Christian music at this point. And so much of it is about a business. It's just really good to hear a story that is about a relationship. And obviously at some point you have to, you know, take care of the business aspect of it. But just to hear something that is beginning out of relationship is, I think, really good for our audience. I think it's really good for this generation to hear that didn't grow up in the church where music was different. You know, I mean, it wasn't the monster that it is today. And I don't say that in a derogatory way, but in a very literal way. It's really become become bigger than the church almost. And
it's you're right, and you should say these things, and you should talk about these things on your podcast, because it's important. I think I was able to come up being influenced by these guys that were fine leading worship for an arena full of people, or in a literal marketplace for people just walking by and they didn't care. I mean, I know these guys have done that, and there's an innocence that I was so influenced by, and I am really sad by a generation of people who have come up thinking the only way God uses you is by putting you on massive platforms, because that's not true.
Right.
And the only way God breathes on you or anoints you is by making people know you. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. It's just not. I mean, now anything, you know, it'd be wrong to say that anything famous is not God. God could be all over the things that are famous. But I'd venture to say he's not all over all of it that's famous.
Sure.
And I know that he's all over things that no one knows about. And I know that he's not all over things that no one knows about. What scares me now, and maybe it's because I'm in my late 30s and looking at what's the next 10 years of my life look like, I do feel this burden to somehow, some way help the culture so that a generation could come up without that mentality. Mm. That I want to be used by God, and the way he uses me is this one way, is the lights and all the stuff and the stage and being known, because it's so missing it, man. It's so missing it, and it's really sad.
Yeah, I agree. The generation's missing it. I think there are pockets where it's not missing it, but I think in general what you could say is that they definitely have a different concept of what the presence means, of what worship means, just and what honestly a generation has fought for. You know, I'm really well connected with a guy named Billy Foote who wrote.
I just met him last week.
Yeah, Billy is amazing. He and I get together on a regular basis. But guys like that, I told Billy a while back, I said, you know, guys like you have fought so hard for things that now this generation doesn't even understand what you fought for within the church, you know, how many battles you fought and eclipsed, you know, obstacles that you constantly, every time you wrote a song or every time you did something, it wasn't the hymn. It wasn't, you know, what had been being done for generations, and what you fought for is now what we take for granted. And what you bring up, you know, talking about your age, which is not, you're not old at all. You're 38 years old. And probably the prime of what you've done as a music artist, but that really brings up an interesting point. And I don't want to extend the podcast so long that we lose interest, but I think it's a really important thing to touch on, because I think it's what a lot of, you know, even worship pastors are dealing with, a lot of guys like Billy Foote, who are at an age where at some point you wonder, am I going to be irrelevant? Because I think what the history of the church has shown is at some point, guys that reach a certain age quit having the opportunity to contribute to worship. I want you to talk about that a little bit. And again, not saying that you're not contributing, because you're contributing at the highest level I think you've probably ever contributed at. What do you say to the guy that's listening to this podcast at maybe 38, 40, or even 50 years old, 60 years old, that has a tremendous gift, that has contributed, but at some point they lost that connect point, or they got overlooked in the same respect that a lot of younger kids get overlooked because they're not old enough to contribute? What do you say to guys like that, and how do you handle walking into that season of your life?
I would say just because they don't know they need you does not mean that they don't need you.
Yeah.
There's this woman that sings at our church. She's 50 something years old, and she came to me a couple of years ago and the sweetest humble heart, and just said, and in all seriousness, just said, "Hey, if at any point you need me to not sing, just let me know. I love serving, but it's totally okay." She had this like, no offense. I wouldn't take any offense. And I was like, "Susan, what are you talking about?" And she said, "Well, you know, I'm 51 years old." And I was like, "Oh my goodness." You know, and she was just so convinced that she had lost the ability to add. And because of the culture that she's living in, she didn't just make that up, you know. And so I was just like, "Susan, I don't want to exploit the fact that you are 51, but I do want to exploit it, because I want you to sing because you're 51. We need you. This is a multi-generational Psalm 95. Come, let us, all of us, worship the Lord." And I think that people, you know, they're getting in their whatever ages, they might start feeling less needed. But I would just say, the culture might be confused, though. They may not know they need you, but they really need you. So just try to be strong. Billy Foots of the world, try to stay steady. You're not in it to be praised anyway, right? I mean, you've right. already realized that. So you're if you're going to be in it for the long haul, you're going to have to face some of this garbage. But where are the prophets? You know, where are the prophets that are shouting out in the wilderness? Where are the John the Baptists? Where are they? I think it's a lot of that generation that sees this thing might have gone a little bit wrong. So we need people to stand up and be the annoying older people to just say, no, this isn't right. And your involvement, you know, Billy Foots of the world, your involvement is so incredibly crucial. And don't wait to feel invited. A younger generation won't know they need to invite you. Just come on in and tear things down so that we can rebuild them.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know if it's, I can't remember if it's Lou Engle or somebody along those lines talks about the synergy of the ages and how there's a power that occurs when generations of people join each other. He wasn't specifically talking about in worship. I think he was talking about in prayer. But I think it relates to worship where when the synergy of each age joins, even generations past where they've gone on to glory and generations yeah. present that may be, you know, fading, and then generations present that are at their prime and generations to come. He said he was talking about how there's a synergy that happens, and it's necessary for the church to operate in that synergy because it creates a power that cannot be seen unless it operates in tandem. And I love the concept behind that, and I feel like you're championing something, and I really appreciate what you're championing, even with the story of Susan. And I appreciate the fact that her name even came up in the conversation of our podcast, because it just really... it really magnifies something that needs to be magnified. And yeah. I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your heart. Love your music. I'm a huge fan. I love what God is doing in and through you. And man, I just can't tell you how much I appreciate you taking the time today to come on the show and just let your voice be magnified, be heard, because what you carry, the wealth of what you carry needs to be heard. And it needs to be just grabbed onto by a generation, and not just a generation, but by a global church. This is the heart of what pastoring through worship really looks like. And so thank you so much, John, for joining us today, for coming on the show and taking your time out of your busy schedule to join the Are You Real podcast.
Thank you, Matt. You're amazing. I appreciate what you're doing, and I appreciate your heart. So really, the honor is fully mine. So thank you.
Yeah, man. How can people connect with you? Social media links, all of that kind of stuff. What's the best way for them to connect with you and what you're doing on a daily basis?
So everything I do, everything is just John C. Egan, J-O-N-C-E-G-A-N is like my Twitter handle and Instagram. And 90% of the social media time that I spend is Instagram. It's just more fun. I've not figured out how to do Facebook. I just can't ever bring myself to learn it and to I have one and it just exists, but I'm not, so it'd be a fat chance to connect with me there. But Instagram is so great, and I've loved connecting with people all over the place through that, so that would be the best way. And I'd love to connect with anybody, especially I've got a batch of new songs that we're going to record in the next couple months. And really, because it's been a couple of years since I've done some stuff on other projects, but to release a batch of songs. So this 2018 for me is going to be really exciting. And there's a fun anticipation and kind of, adventure. So I'd love to stay in touch with anybody. And if anybody wants to let me into their lives, I would just be honored.
Very cool. So is that going to be a studio recording or is it a live recording?
No, we're going to record live with stuff. Dreaming about it still, of exactly how to do it, but there's one of the plans is to do a few nights here at the church, but not necessarily doing a service, but actually do like a few hundred people, just a few hundred people. I mean, New Life's big and I love it. I love it, but, just get a few hundred people, all be on the same floor together, no stage, and track. Because a bunch of these songs can be really stripped down in a certain way, and then a few of them are just songs that I love to write, like big sweeping songs. But so yeah, I think we're gonna do something like that to maybe even send the message of kind of what we've been talking about on this podcast. Like, let's record in a way that doesn't put put a band 4 feet above everybody else on top of stage. And yeah, which is, you know, whatever. Stages could be functional. We need to see who's leading. I get that, but you know.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Any specific flagship events that you have coming up that you want people to connect with, dates or anything like that you have coming?
At Desperation Conference Summer, which is always an amazing time. I'm doing a conference called Bold in Kansas City this summer. Oh, it'd be awesome to see people out there.
Awesome.
Doing some stuff. There's some stuff that happens at New Life, which is really cool. Leadership stuff, and that'd be really fun. I did a thing called Refuel Conference. I did it a few weeks ago. I don't know if I'm doing it again next year, though. They're flirting with that. They're just leading me on to think I'm coming back because I really want to go back. This event is really cool. Refuel. They do it every year in January. People should check that out.
Fabulous.
Yeah, stuff like that.
Great. So our audience can tune into areyoureal.org, and you can find all of this information in the show notes, everything that we've talked about today, social media handles, links to be able to connect with John, and as well as being able to connect with me as a host. And I really appreciate you coming on the show today. We appreciate you tuning in today to Are You Real Creatives? And again, we will connect with you again in the near future. Be on the lookout. All of our shows, you can find them on the Are You Real podcast section and all of your favorite platforms for listening to podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify. Check us out, Are You Real? And stay tuned for the next episode. John, we appreciate you joining us today.
Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk to you later. You guys have a wonderful day.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Are You Real Creatives? Your next step is to visit areyoureal.org for more resources and show notes based on today's episode, as well as to connect with your host on social media. We look forward to you joining us next time as we shape culture through creative influence right here on Are You Real Creatives?